Mum As You Are is a place for self-compassionate reflection, to use what you have within you right now, as you are, perfectly imperfect, to find your way through motherhood. I'm Dr. Erin Bauer, clinical and perinatal psychologist, author of More Than a Healthy Baby, course creator, and mum of two. This is my second podcast. Welcome if you've followed me over from my birth trauma work. This current podcast offering is bite-sized, unfancy, and unplanned. A roadmap for finding your way back to self-compassion and how to replace numbing and escapism with true, meaningful fun. I talk about motherhood as an identity and an institution, perinatal mental health and patriarchy, parental burnout and numbing. The core message is to practice the question, I wonder. Instead of judging ourselves and engaging in comparisonitis, we simply ask ourselves, I wonder. I wonder. This topic has come up a lot lately. Sometimes these things just come in waves. I was interviewed about this on a podcast recently, but I thought sometimes things just pop up and you're like, all right, I'll just do this again as another reminder, because I don't think we can ever have too many reminders about the normal nature of scary thoughts. And I'm ever aware that some people are just learning this for the first time. I remember when I learned it for the first time, and I think it's one of the most valuable pieces of mental health work you can do, like, for yourself in this perinatal space, is just have awareness that everybody has scary thoughts. Like, 90% of new parents have some sort of intrusive, weird, scary thoughts, and they're normal. They stem from the fact that we are biologically wired to scan for danger and keep our babies safe. So take a breath and some comfort in knowing that you're not alone in this. We all have seriously weird thoughts. Some of us have more awareness of them than others. Some of us give them more attention than others. And, you know, we have thousands of them a day, probably. The technical name for them is ego dystonic thoughts. So I've mentioned this, I think it was in my first book, More Than a Healthy Baby, that Freud was not the most feminist, empathic, or kind of human-centered therapist, but ego dystonic thoughts is something that comes from him. So, in a kind of brief nutshell, ego syntonic thoughts are ones that are consistent or acceptable to our ego. They can be boring thoughts like, oh, I need a sandwich, or that's a cute baby, or something like that. Ego dystonic thoughts are the ones that are inconsistent with, or we would say like unacceptable to our ego. They're the ones where you kind of think, oh, I better not share that because you don't want people to judge you, or there's some shame around them, right? It's a matter of awareness, frequency, and the meaning that you make behind them. So some really common ones in the postpartum phase. What if I drown my baby? What if I let go of the pram? What if, I crush my baby's head? Like, lots of people have ego dystonic thoughts around, like, the soft tissue in their baby's head, and that they're so fragile or delicate and that they're going to hurt them, things like that. I've mentioned before, I used to have one about nail clippers and just, like, not being able to get any of those because it just, like, made me feel ick. So, generally speaking, if you're aware that the thought doesn't make sense, and I think having talked to lots of people about this, there's sometimes also like a bodily sensation that goes with this, like a recoil or a reject or just a kind of bristle, right? So you know that you would never deliberately do any of those things. That's an ego dystonic thought. And the best thing you can do for yourself in the moment is validate it as normal. Your kids are also going to have ego dystonic thoughts. Kids are a little bit more free and loose with them sometimes, and our reactions to them can serve as lots of memories for shame. I've talked about this in my book as well. I can't remember how old I was, maybe I was 4 or 5, asking my mum in the car once what would happen, when frogs croak and you pop, what if you popped a pin in it? And she was like, it was obviously not the right time. She was a bit horrified and was like, you know, well, you don't do that. And, you know, there was a shame memory that came with that. And that's not her fault. It's not my fault. It's just, you know, wrong place, wrong time, wrong reaction. And I've been through that with my kids as well, where sometimes they just say things, you're like, ooh, that's a bit off. And I don't always react to it like I am now, going, oh, yep, that's an ego dystonic thought. Let's not worry about it. Okay? When you give things more attention, you tend to get more of them. Your brain is no different to a sneaky toddler figuring out what's going to get a reaction out of you. Okay, so the best thing that you can do is just validate the thought and try some diffusion techniques. Sometimes a bit of humor helps, of saying like, oh, hello there, sneaky thought, I see you there. Or you can try singing it, or you can try, saying it in a ridiculous voice, right? Donald Duck, or I don't know, choose your reference for a silly voice. And just take some of the heat out of it. Use some diffusion. Sometimes I also just practice a distancing technique. So whenever you have a thought that's a bit new, you say, I am having the thought that, and then you repeat it again. That's a technique that's used in different types of therapy. So just take the sort of sense that you are the thought, you're not the thought, it's just a thought. And as I said, it's normal. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a diagnosable health condition. There's a huge difference between having a thought and acting on a thought. Absolutely massive. These thoughts are most likely to pop up when you're tired, when you're hormonal, when you're emotional, and when you're vulnerable. But it's like feeding the seagulls. The more attention you give it, the more that you make it mean something that it doesn't necessarily mean, the more of that you're going to get, because your brain pays attention to that as like meaningful information. When it's not meaningful, it's just junk. Not every single thought that we have is meaningful or profound. If you look for it, a lot of our thoughts are kind of just junk, just as computers and other devices display like strange error messages or have bugs. You know, in saying that, if the frequency is getting to a point where you're struggling to get through the day, or potentially you're finding that there's some sneaky kind of like reassuring behaviors that go with it, like you have a thought and then start doing a behavior to try and like balance out the thought or correct the thought, that might be leading more into an anxiety disorder or something like OCD, like genuine an OCD, not just you like things tidy OCD, but like genuinely you're really struggling with thoughts and compulsions. Compulsions are the behaviors that people do to try and control thoughts. So if you're struggling with that, I think you might want to get some support for that. And finding somebody that you can trust to talk to about that is important. So most perinatal psychologists, most clinical psychologists, most psychologists in general should be trained in this stuff. They're not always. But you can ask questions. You can just ask that question. What do you know about ego dystonic and ego syntonic thoughts? That should be enough to figure out whether somebody is likely to be able to help you or not. Because it is a big concern of parents that if they reveal thoughts that are weird and scary, that their kids are going to be taken away, of course, right? That in itself is a scary thought in itself. And I also know that a lot of mums will sometimes actively avoid doing self-care and having downtime because it triggers the thoughts. Being alone can sometimes give your brain a green light to let out all sorts of like crap that you suppress during the day and don't want to think about when you're with your children. This is part of releasing the mental load though, and it's part of the self-care space, I suppose, that a lot of people don't talk about. I also think it's why some mums are more resistant to the idea of doing self-care and things like meditation, because meditation can be a scary place if you're alone with your thoughts and you have lots of scary thoughts and it's uncomfortable, right? Meditation in itself, I have another podcast episode on that, but meditation is actually meant to be hard. It's not meant to be all zen and like sitting on a cloud and be wonderful. But in saying that, I sometimes think people need to reframe what they think meditation means. It doesn't necessarily mean sitting on a nice cushion, cross-legged, just being alone with your thoughts. Sometimes you're better off moving. And if you've got excess cortisol and those corticosteroids from stress in your body, you're actually better off dancing, walking, doing something with your hands, make something, do something methodical, do something creative, move. I would probably prefer you don't sit still. Just a thought. Don't be afraid of your shadow work. The work of defragging the mum brain is not instantly rewarding. It's unpleasant. And so for a lot of us, the busy work of writing lists and rushing around and being frazzled for the sake of it can be a more comfortable place. It serves as distraction from these unpleasant experiences. So long as you're busy and you're doing all these things, you're avoiding downtime and you don't have to deal with the thoughts. That's not sustainable. You're going to burn and crash. Crash and burn, rather, if you do that. So it's a practice. It is a practice and it's overwhelming, but you can get through it. The difference I also want to spell out here is people who have scary thoughts and they make sense, so they don't have a recoil response to them, they don't seem to have a reaction to the seriousness of them, that can be more likely a sign of psychosis. So generally someone who's having psychosis, like, it's a rare behavior, but it is also considered an emergency because you can't talk someone down from the idea that they're having a thought and then they think they need to act on it. Like I said, it is rare. It usually has a more persecutory tone, sometimes a religious tone to it, like a voice commanding you to do something. Not always, but sometimes. But the sort of the check there for me is always, does the person realize that the thoughts, the sounds, the voices, the experiences are outside of their brain and outside of their experience, or do they recognize that they're generated from within their brain? So it's the same with any thoughts. If you realize that you're having the thought and you have a reaction to it and go, oh, that's unpleasant, that's scary or something, it's not as likely to be a psychosis. It's a lot more nuanced than that. I'm not wanting to make this simplistic. Generally speaking, when you have psychosis and you have delusions, you don't know that you're having delusions. If you know that these things are coming from inside your own head, then it's a bit different. So I just wanted to spell that out at the end. But yeah, don't be afraid of the scary thoughts. Acknowledge that they're there. Validate them. Use some diffusion. And as I said, if the frequency is getting too much that you can't get on with the day, go and talk to your GP, get a referral, do some work with someone to really, what you're doing is like resetting neural pathways. I like to think of it as like some of the neural pathways have just gone off a bit, short-circuited somewhere, and all you're going to do is get them back on track. That's what psychologists do, as well as offering like validation and support and tools. But I could go on and on and on. Hopefully that in itself is